Looking to refresh your closet, home, or beauty routine this spring? Walmart's got all the stylish goods in one stop. From chic new looks and the latest makeup to quality furniture and tableware. Go to walmart.com/nowtrending. That's walmart.com/nowtrending for the hottest fashion, home, and beauty finds. Your style at Walmart.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hello everyone and welcome to this week's edition of the Spanish Football Podcast. I'm Phil Kitchmalides, here to discuss what happened on Match Day 24 with my good friend and colleague, Dr. Sid Lowe. Hello, Sid.
Hello, Phil. How are you?
I'm okay. You finished writing for a Monday?
Well, I finished the main part. I finished the piece, but I now have to do all the rest of the weekend's news, which quite handily I can now just make a note of as you tell me all of them.
Yes. Well, there we go. Very handily. This is what happened on Match Day 24. Friday night was an Andalusian derby at the Estadio Nuevo Mirandilla. It saw Real Betis beat Cadiz by 2-0. It is 5.5 months since Cadiz won a league game of football. They're beginning to look pretty desperate at the moment. Then on Saturday, Alaves and Villarreal played out a 1-1 draw. Osasuna won away to Real Sociedad. It's the first time in a long, long time that they've won away to Real Sociedad. 18 years they hadn't won away to their near neighbours, but a goal from Ante Budimir enough to give them all 3 points. La Real, by the way, have gone four consecutive games without scoring. Last time they did that was 2004 when they were in the second division. Sid and I were both at the Estadio Santiago Bernabeu to see Real Madrid demolish Girona by 4-0. And then Las Palmas scored twice very late on to beat Valencia by 2-0. Sunday, Sydney was in attendance to see Getafe beat Celta Vigo by 3-2. It's even painful just to say this, but there we go. Rayo conceded once again in injury time to lose. They were beaten 2-1 by Mallorca, and Rayo looking pretty dreadful. Sevilla beating Atletico Madrid by 1-0. The goal scored by Isak Romero, who has had really a massive impact on this Sevilla side. A couple of weeks ago, he was playing in the fourth division of Spanish football, or the fourth tier of Spanish football for Sevilla B, and he's now got 3 league goals in 5 appearances.
Is this at the point at which I act cocky for you having laughed at me for having gone to watch Sevilla Atletico play on a Sunday morning once about 6 weeks ago, and I can now presumir, as they say in Spanish, of having seen Isak Romero before anyone else even knew about him. Although I can't claim that he made an impact.
I asked you about him and you said I can't even remember if he was playing. So don't try that one. I've asked you and you said I didn't even know if he was playing or not. He was playing in that game because I looked it up, but he didn't score. Yeah. But there we go. He's been doing very well indeed. Yeah, Isak Romero. And Barcelona drawing 3-3 with Granada. Second bottom Granada. Scoring 3 times away to Barcelona, who have got serious, serious issues. More on that in just a moment. Monday night football is Almeria against Athletic Club. Can Almeria do it, guys? Can they finally win a game of football? It's been a long time since that's happened. They remain bottom of the table and winless. Over at patreon.com/TSFP this week, here's what's on the menu, guys. Patrons are getting a brand new episode of Rincón Cultural, our podcast about the cultural nuances of living in this wonderful country. They also get the usual Q&A pod answering your questions and a bonus pod discussing Champions League games for Real Madrid and Real Sociedad this week. You can be part of the fantastic La Liga loving community on the TSFP Discord. You get all of that for around €4 a month. It's not a lot of money. It's not a lot of money. It goes quite far for La Liga content. So come and join us. patreon.com/TSFP. So, Sydney, you, Al and I were all at the Bernabeu to see Real Madrid beat Girona 4-0. It's quite interesting, isn't it? Because we'd spoken in the build-up to this game, and This felt like such a big occasion. It was sold out. I think I mentioned the ticket prices. The cheapest ticket was €95 for this game up in the Gaunt at the Bernabeu. Those are the kind of prices that are usually reserved for the other team from Catalonia or a big Champions League game. But this had a feel of being a really, really big occasion. There were quite a lot of fans from Girona. Officially, 300 were in the away stand, but there were quite a few more as well. It felt like a big deal. And then Madrid just absolutely blew Girona apart.
Yeah, and it felt like they partly blew them apart because it was a big deal. I was quite struck by Rodrigo's comment after the game. He said, you know, we knew this was a big game. And there's that pause where you can almost see him realise what he's saying. He said, well, look, every game's bigger. Every game's a big one, but maybe this was just a little bit bigger. And I think there was a sense, wasn't there, from Real Madrid of just saying, okay, let's put an end to this. Now, I don't want to overplay it because that does suggest that Madrid can just turn it on and off as they wish, and that's not entirely true. But I think there's a small element of that. And if you look at the way that Ancelotti was talking post-game, I think from some of what he was saying, I thought we got echoes of what happens in Europe with Real Madrid, in that he referred to this as a humble game, a game of humility. And I don't know if you remember this, but when we were talking about Madrid's kind of Champions League miracle a couple of years ago, I described it, I came up with this theory that I thought it was a combination of a huge superiority complex and enormous humility as well. In other words, a team that says, right, we've got loads of talent, we're really, really good. At some point, the moment will come and we will take it because we're good players and we will take that chance. But we're aware, we're humble enough. And I realise that using the word humble about Real Madrid, will, you know, there'll be a lot of our listeners going, hang on a minute, that's not a word I'd use about Real Madrid. But I think in Europe, there's been an element of that in recent years. Of that sense that, okay, we know these are good teams. So if we have 25 minutes or half an hour, or in the case of the Man City game, 70 minutes, where in truth the other team is better than us, we're not going to lose our heads. We're not going to lose. We're not going to kind of lose the plot. Now, I don't want to go quite far that far down this route for this game, because of course it's Girona. And Girona, the reality is that Real Madrid should be bigger than them. And this is a big part of what Michel was saying post-game and the analysis that he was offering. And I think he's absolutely right. But if you look at the way that Real Madrid started, I thought they played with three midfielders quite narrow, quite tight and quite close to their defenders when they didn't have the ball. But then they would go and press when they had the chance to push Girona back. And Ancelotti talked about that post-game, which I was surprised by. I was surprised that he was quite so clear about that. And then, of course, you then had the quality of the players on the pitch. You know, I was writing about this for the match report, obviously, and I've been writing about it again today. And you know, I couldn't kind of see beyond, at least on Saturday, that famous Mike Tyson quote. You know, everyone's got a plan till you punch them in the mouth. I had that feeling on Saturday. And again, I don't want to overplay this because Madrid scored after only 5 minutes, so it's pretty early. But those were 5 minutes of Girona having the ball, moving it around, and Madrid sort of saying,
I was doing a SID. I was trying to count.
You were counting, weren't you?
I think it was 3 minutes 37. The first 3 minutes 37 seconds, Girona had the ball the entire time.
Yeah.
Which is not normal at the moment.
It really was loads. And I was certainly counting that first possession, which took 80 seconds, the first possession before the ball, I think, went out of play, and then Girona got it back again. I didn't continue beyond that point, but it was very striking. Girona were like, okay, we've got the ball. And then Vinicius goes, wallop, there's your punch. And it's gone. And of course, one of the things about Real Madrid, and I think this really reinforces, and I don't want to be a smart ass, but I'm going to be a smart ass. Allow me to be a smart ass. This really reinforces the way that we have talked about Real Madrid all season. That we've looked at them all season and we thought, we're not sure that they're that sparkling. We're not sure that they're that brilliant. But we just watch them and feel like, yeah, they're better. They're going to do this.
They were pretty sparkling and brilliant on Saturday.
They were brilliant on Saturday. But I thought that what that first half performance did was show that they could do the resisting bit and then whack you. And then they could take control of possession. And I think Ancelotti was really interesting on this post-game. He talked about how they were really good in possession and in transition. And they did both those things really well, playing deep when they had to and then breaking from there into loads of space and then also keeping the ball and saying, OK, you can't have it back. Now, I think the possession stats by the end, I'm not sure if they were in favour of Girona, but they certainly were at half-time. And yet you still felt, no, Madrid are the more dangerous team. And I think why I say this fits with our analysis all season is you kept feeling like when it matters, they're going to just kind of step up and say, right, okay, it's done. Now, again, I don't want to make it too instrumental and make it too easy and make it sound like they could just choose to do this. But I do think there's an element of that. I'm saying, right, this is the big game. we do this now. And I think if you go through that team, and it was very noticeable listening to Michel post-game talk about, he said, look, and he actually said the bit, he's like, yeah, Camavinga, Vinicius, Bellingham. So when you come up against players like that, you realise what your own reality is. And our reality isn't this. And I think that's, I would love to add to that as well, Toni Kroos, who I thought was wonderful at the weekend. Handful of other players played really well as well. But I just think you look at Real Madrid and you think, yeah, they've just got lots of really good players.
They've got lots of really good players, many of whom put in really, really strong performances. We could spend a lot of time dissecting individually many performances, but I guess we have to dwell on Vinicius because he scored one, he set up two. It might have been one of his, I mean, it was one of his best games for Real Madrid. And Ancelotti says when he plays like that, when he's focused on and his attitude is right, he's the best in the world.
Mm. Well, I thought Ancelotti, there was a message in there, wasn't there, when Ancelotti says when his attitude is this. That was definitely a message because, of course, that's a recurring theme. And we saw it after the Super Cup when Ancelotti said he didn't like him doing little back heels on a touchline when the game was already won. In fairness, we should point out that he was talking about Vinicius and Jude Bellingham on that occasion. But there's been lots of conversations with Vinicius over the years. There was a comment from Nacho Fernandez saying, you know, we've tried to talk to him. We've tried to get him to focus on the football. We're trying to do this. And that day after the Super Cup final, Vinicius actually came out and said, I'm not a saint and I'm trying to change. Which I think we all thought was really interesting at the time. But I think the bottom line is the talent. And the talent is extraordinary. I was thinking about this today. And so apologies if you've read me by the time you've listened to this. But I was kind of thinking about the four goals. And as you said, Vinicius got one goal and two assists. I actually think he gets three assists in this game. Because I think his is the last touch before the fourth goal. Albeit Rodrigo then runs from almost the halfway line. But Vinicius is the one who gives him the ball by making the tackle. And he makes a tackle on Jan Koto, poor old Jan Koto, who was in tears at the end because he almost could not have had a worse day. But if you look
he was literally crying when when the guy who's marking you is literally in tears in the end. You know, you've probably had a good game.
You've destroyed him. You've really put him through it. But look at the four goals, and I think what's interesting in this is that Vinicius is involved in all four goals in four very different ways, and the way I was thinking through it today is he was four different players, right? Bear with me on this. The first goal is Cristiano Ronaldo. That's coming in off the left and absolutely belting the bastard and just completely smashing it into the corner. The second one, obviously, it's Luka Modric. It's the outside of his boot. It's bent. The timing and the weighting of that pass is absolutely impeccable. I think it's a genuinely brilliant, brilliant assist. The third one is Neymar. He's running at someone, rolling the ball under his boots. He flips it from one foot to the other. He goes through one player, slips it through the legs of another, and then Bellingham's there to finish it off. And in the fourth, he's the one pressing the defender, winning the ball, giving it to Rodrigo. Well, sort of giving it to Rodrigo by winning it. I still think statistically that might count as an assist, albeit Rodrigo's still got 50 metres still to run. And I was trying to think of which player he is, you know, robbing high and being aggressive. And I thought, he's Gavi. Now, I know Madrid fans won't thank me for saying Gavi, but he was the only one I could think of. But you've got a player who has four goal participations of very different types. Now, in a game in which Vinicius plays brilliantly, but all of it is running at people, it's exciting, it's electric, and he's brilliant to watch. But this is four different types of things. And in particular, that that Modric-style pass is really, really striking. And I thought he was brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
I actually think he has been given the assist for the Rodrigo goal. So, yeah, I think so.
Oh, well, there you go then. Because it is his last touch, isn't it, before Rodrigo gets it? Albeit, as I say, Rodrigo has to run 50 metres into the penalty area to score.
It's a very generous assist given there.
But, yeah, it is generous,
Listen, there is so much we could talk about this game, genuinely loads, but I do want to move on because we've got other stuff to talk about from La Liga this weekend. If you've got a question, send it to us. We'll talk about it tomorrow. Shout out to Madrid, by the way, who had all four centre backs injured for this game from their first team squad and still managed to keep.
Well, and their first choice goalkeeper.
And their first choice goalkeeper, and they kept a clean sheet. And for the first time this season, Girona didn't have a shot on target.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The holidays have arrived early with Blinds.com's Spring Black Friday sale. Upgrading window coverings can be a minor project with a major impact. Blinds.com makes it easy and affordable. Browse premium blinds, shades, shutters. We have your patio covered too. And get unlimited window treatments installed for one low cost. Free shipping and Blinds.com's 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com's Spring Black Friday sale now. Save up to 45% plus premium doorbusters. Up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Before we move on, Sid, the title race, the rest of the season in La Liga, it's not over yet because the difference is only 5 points. Real Madrid are 5 points clear of Girona, but then they're 10 points clear of Barcelona and 13 points clear of Atletico Madrid. It feels like it's very close to being done.
Yeah, I think so as well, because if you look at what's left, Real Madrid have been away to Girona, away to Barcelona, away to Atletico Madrid, admittedly where they were beaten. They've been away to San Mamés. I think the only really tough, they've been away to Betis, they've been away to Sevilla, albeit I don't know if those count as really tough games anymore. Certainly Betis I think probably does, but Sevilla maybe doesn't. The only really tough away trip they've got to do now is Real Sociedad. And so I look at the fixture list now and I think, first of all, you've got Madrid's quality, which I just think is higher than Girona's. Even if you can make a case to say that their quality is not significantly higher than Barcelona's or Atletico's, their lead is. You know, the lead over those two is really, really big now. Yes, they've got the Champions League. Yes, they've got a short squad. Yes, they might struggle for because of the injuries, and particularly as Bellingham's now going to be out for probably a couple of weeks, maybe three.
Yeah.
But I just think that that gap is significant. To be perfectly honest with you, even if Girona had gone top by 1 point winning this, I would still think Madrid would probably just about end up winning the league. But the fact that they've now got a 5-point lead over Girona and then a bigger lead still, is it 8 and 10 or is it 10 and 13?
10 and 13.
10 and 13. I mean, that's a huge lead over Barcelona and Atletico. I mean, put it in very simple terms, 10 over Barcelona. Are Barcelona going to win 3 more games than Real Madrid? Because even that's not enough to catch them. And I think the answer is probably not.
Feels unlikely, given Barcelona's current situation, or the situation that they've really been going through for the vast majority of the season. A few weeks ago, Xavi decided to announce that he was leaving at the end of the season, hoping to spark some kind of reaction from his players. Since then, we've seen them scrape a 1-0 win at home to Osasuna in somewhat unconvincing fashion, and then go to Alaves and beat them by 3-1 in a game in which they conceded plenty of chances as well. So there weren't two particularly convincing victories, but you guess if you desperately wanted to, and I think Xavi did, you could make an argument that there had been some kind of reaction because there had been two victories. There is absolutely no way that that slightly tenuous argument can continue after Sunday's performance against Granada, which was really quite extraordinarily poor in almost every imaginable way. The only ray of light for Barcelona is Lamine Yamal, who scored twice and at the age of 16 became the first player ever to score a brace in La Liga, age 16. He's continuing to amaze and marvel and thrill us, but within the context of playing in a really quite, I don't want to say the side is depressed, Sid, but it feels really sort of flat, this Barcelona team. There is no reaction to Xavi's announcement. They're shipping lots of goals. And how about this? Catalunya Radio reporting that Joan Laporta sent trays of canapes flying in the palco after this result, and presumably flying onto the floor. And not being consumed. So yeah, really quite bad night for Barca.
Well, I mean, they're called volavants for a reason. They were volando, those volavants, all over the place. I mean, it's pretty startling, isn't it? And it tells you something about the tension internally. I don't know if you saw, there was an interview that Deco had done, I think, with a Portuguese TV. I'm not sure. I must confess, I only saw the pickups. I didn't see the original.
Yes.
In which he basically has said, we've got to change everything. Our entire identity, our style has got to change. And I think that tells you something about the internal tensions, because if anyone represents a style, even if the reality was different to the discourse, then it's Xavi. This performance was, as you say, it was bizarre in some ways, because, I mean, it was kind of, we've seen a bit of chaos this year, but this was sort of almost more chaotic than the previous ones. Like, we've seen moments of chaos this year, but this one was, I suppose it was chaotic all the way through. Admittedly, at 1-0, Barca have a couple of chances to make it 2-0. Maybe it's different at that point, and certainly Xavi liked to, or said that that's what he felt post-game, that they'd been in a position where they could have put it to bed and they didn't do so. But when they made it 3-3, almost immediately Granada had a chance for 4-3. There was opportunities for Granada, who aren't a great team. Admittedly, they are an improving one, or at least they're competing better. I'm not sure I would actually say they're a really improving team. But Easterly had a really good game, a really, really good game. But Barcelona just kind of all over the place. And, you know, I've been critical of him on occasions this year. But Gundogan, for example, you look at his statistics are brilliant. And you sort of think, imagine if he was playing in a good team. We might actually be looking at him and saying, wow, he's amazing. But this whole thing just doesn't function. And as you say, the bright spot is a really bright spot, because Lamine Yamal is so exciting, and he is only 16, for goodness sake, and he does things that I don't think we see other players do. He makes decisions really well, which actually I think sometimes is a difficult thing when you've got a young player like him. So you've got a young player who is quick and skillful and can take people on. Sometimes when those kind of players come into the first team, and it's what excites everyone, that excitement and that capacity to run at people sometimes blinds them to other options. But actually, Lamine Yamal doesn't make bad decisions. It's not like he runs at people. Mm. He's not like Dembélé, for example, running at people when he shouldn't or passing when he should run. He seems to know the right moment. He seems to choose well. And I think he's going to be a really, really, really good footballer. But Barcelona are, a bit of a mess. And I suppose the question mark now is, can there be a mental, to use the Spanish phrase, can they change the chip for the Champions League? Because if they play like this in the Champions League, to be perfectly honest, they will get battered. They won't just get beaten. They'll really lose badly. Now, I trust in the fact that there will be a sort of slightly different mindset. Maybe it'll be structurally a bit different. Maybe there will be something about the occasion. But this isn't good at all.
They are taking on Napoli in the Champions League. They're not playing this week. They're playing the week after. They're away to Napoli in the first leg. Napoli, who are ninth in Serie A, so it's not like they're flying. I mean, it's actually quite similar, aren't they? I mean, Barcelona are really struggling, and the current Spanish champions, Napoli, they're really struggling, and the current Italian champions. So we'll see. But yeah, they're not doing well at all. Just to go back to those quotes you mentioned from Deco, it was about the method. He said, el método está agotado y hay que romper con el pasado. The method, like the method of working, the style, I guess, is finished. It's finished, agotado, finished, over. And you have to break with the past. I mean, the club have tried to sort of suggest that these comments were taken out of context, which, you know.
Of course they were. They always are. It's never the person who said them.
Yeah, difficult to understand how they would be. But those are quite, as they say in Spanish, duras declaraciones, quite sort of strong things for the sporting director to be saying about how Barcelona approach everything. I mean, I don't want to be completely, it's completely negative about Barcelona, but this was a very negative night. We've mentioned how Lamine Yamal is a positive and how, you know, he's exciting. But listen, there is a possibility that Barcelona could be struggling to finish in the top four. I mean, they're still 3 points ahead of Atleti, who are fourth, and Athletic Club have a game in hand, and there are a further 3 points behind. So if they win, there's a chance that they go level on points with Atletico Madrid. My point being, I just think it's worth us reminding how important it is for Barcelona to finish in the top four economically, And if they don't, it could be the start of a really, really, I mean, they're already in a bad way financially, but this could be the start of a catastrophic cycle for them. If you do not make the Champions League, remember Barcelona have already sold off a good chunk of their TV rights for money to buy players with over the last 18 months. But now that means they're going to be getting less money than Real Madrid from TV rights for the next 30 years. I don't know. It just feels like a really, really bad situation for Barcelona. And I'm not sure what the way out is at the moment. I don't see a light at the end of the tunnel. And I was listening to some of the Barcelona reporters on the radio yesterday, and they were similarly, they were just like, I can't see a way out of this. This feels really, really bad at the moment.
Well, the way out is the Super League. That's one of the reasons why they cling to it. And there's an unease at Barcelona, by the way, about the Super League, because as you've seen, Laporta has started to edge away from Florentino Perez a little bit, partly because I guess there's a discomfort in Madrid being the ones leading the Super League project. I think there's a discomfort at the risk of what this might mean to your relationship with UEFA if it doesn't go through, and actually, you know, it looks very much like the Super League project, at least in the short term, probably isn't going to happen. Well, I think it may help to leverage a little bit more power from UEFA, but there's a difference between controlling it and having a bit more power. And of course, one of the things that gets missed, I think, in this whole Super League discussion, and I don't want to go down this route because we could be here all day, is that one of the reasons that the situation is what it is because actually UEFA has ceded power to the big clubs, but it hasn't ceded power to organise and to run and to control. And that's sort of the way out for Barcelona. But I'm not sure that that's going to happen. And as you say, you know, this is one of the things about the palancas, and you sell off part of your future earnings. And of course, in the short term, you think, well, it's not so bad because you build a team and it's only a small percentage and so on. But if you think of it as a small percentage,
it's 25%.
In one season. All right. So one summer, we spend 25% less than Real Madrid, effectively, or at least we get 25% less from TV money. It doesn't necessarily mean you'll spend 25% less because you may believe that you can generate money elsewhere. But you're getting 25% less. You might think, well, all right, one season. But do that for 10 seasons and it looks quite bad, you know. And admittedly, it's not your only source of income. And of course, the hope of the Super League is that the Super League income would so dwarf the La Liga income that actually losing that over the next 25 years becomes largely irrelevant. And it is plausible that that is the final outcome. I don't think it's happening in the short term, but it's plausible that that becomes the final outcome. It's plausible, I suppose, at some point that Barcelona try and buy some of these rights back, or that they believe that they generate sufficient money with these new partners that it covers any shortfall. But the point is, the shortfall of the actual TV rights itself will always be relative to the other teams. So relative to Real Madrid, it will always be 25% less.
What about them becoming a limited company?
Well, there's a bit of me that thinks, okay, so let's think about how this works. And here comes the person that knows nothing about finance. All right, so I'm saying this intuitively.
Two people who know nothing about finance. I'm here as well. Yeah,
but you are essentially what Barcelona have done in a way is privatise without privatisation, without putting the club in private hands, in that they've sold some of the club's assets. Now, obviously, in truth, clubs do this a lot. So, but the reality is that the asset they normally sell is normally a player. That's the big difference this time. These are future sales assets. Now, other clubs have done this. For example, Real Madrid selling their old training ground, I suppose, in a way, was the original palanca. Real Madrid have a deal with Legends and Sixth Street in terms of the exploitation of some of the stadium income and so on. But, of course, that starts from a zero point, rather than starts from a point of this is money we're getting and we're now giving it away. It starts from a zero point to build towards something. So if you sell 49% of your club, that has a huge injection of cash, and then you have a part owner. But the way the financial fair play rules are in Spain, that brings in that money at that point to effectively, if you like, kind of clear everything and maybe give you a surplus of cash and maybe give you the funds to build from. But the way La Liga rules are, let's say for argument's sake, you sell half your club to, I don't know, Coca-Cola, right? Coca-Cola can't just give, or more likely a Saudi investment fund. They can't just give you money every year, at least not according to the rules. And so it doesn't necessarily mean that everything's fine. It means you effectively get a fresh start, and you get a fresh start with a financial deposit, and you probably will get investment, and you probably will get fine ways of increasing your social capital. But I think there is a bit of a risk in thinking that this resolves it forever, and I'm not sure it does.
Let's move on. There's much more that we could discuss, but yeah, there's still other things here we want to mention. Sevilla beating Atletico by a goal to nil. That goal scored by your old mate Sid, Isak Romero, who you've known for a long while. You've been keeping your eye on him.
I have.
Actually,
yeah.
You know what?
Detail scouting report.
When he first came into the team and he was called up, I think we might have mentioned this on the podcast.
Yeah, you mentioned it to me. You said, "What's this? What are they doing with this guy?"
I was like, "Well, hold on. He's 23 and he's playing in the fourth division with Sevilla." By the time you're 23, you would have expected someone to take the jump into, I mean, at least second division. I mean, I don't know. There seemed to be a little bit of a red flag here. I was like, hold on, maybe he's not that good. Well, yeah. You know, actually, Kitro, he's very, very good. Actually, he's not just a goal scorer. I'm really impressed with everything about him. His movement, his strength, his passing as well. He laid on a lovely goal for Youssef En-Nesyri at Vallecas last week, and he put two goals on a plate last night against Atleti. Youssef En-Nesyri missed, and Oliver Torres missed a great chance as well. He's a really clever player, and it's really nice to see players being brought in through the youth academy, and that is what the B teams are there for. They're literally there to supplement the first team, and Sevilla have had to dip into the cantera, the youth academy, and they've plucked out Isak Romero, you know, showing what I know. At the moment, he's doing extremely well, and he's a player to get excited about, and Sevilla needed him, and they needed some excitement, and God knows they needed the two wins in a row that they've just had to lift them 6 points clear of the relegation zone. So yeah, a big discovery, this Isak Romero for them.
I'm going to defend you here, by the way. You say that shows what I know, but with the greatest of respect, that shows what anyone knew, because as you rightly say, if he's 23 and playing in a B team, then, you know, all right, players can mature later. Players
a B team in the fourth tier, Sid, as well.
A B team in the fourth tier, yeah, exactly. This isn't a guy that's beating up on everybody in that division. It's not like, you know, it's not like this is a guy that playing against teams, those teams have got their reports and going, wow, this guy is, you know, he shouldn't be here. And if he's 23 and hasn't been given a chance in the first team until now, it tells you that the other first team coaches, and possibly even the B team coaches, because they are there in part to propose and to suggest and to identify players with a particular projection, that happens sooner if they think he's genuinely special. If they thought he was this good 2 years ago, then this happens sooner. And this partly comes, but then this is always the way, and we know this, and let's not pretend otherwise, and let's not be so naive as to claim otherwise, that players get opportunities at times of difficulty. There's a reason why Valencia's first team is packed full of kids. Now, one of them is that those kids are very good, right? And the other is that the youth system works really quite well at Valencia, and the work they do bringing the players through is really quite good. But someone has to open that final door. And that final door doesn't open. I'm going to really murder the metaphor now. If the room on the other side is already packed, and it's packed with great players, it only gets opened if what's inside doesn't convince the manager.
Have you used that in an article?
I haven't, but should I? Do you suggest I should do this?
Yeah, that was good. The door has been opened to Isak Romero, and the room isn't that full, and he's making space in that room for himself. Atleti, their sixth away defeat of the season. They've been so strong at home. They're unbeaten at home in the league, but they've lost six times away from home. They were beaten in the Copa del Rey semi-final first leg. They're 13 points behind Real Madrid. They've got a tough-looking Champions League tie against their Inter Milan. I mean, this could be another disappointing season for Atleti.
Yeah, and in the context of a season that we thought was looking all right.
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons why it's kind of difficult to get your head around, because actually for a lot of this season we thought, oh, they're playing well, and they're playing differently than Atletico used to, and we're seeing a side that's creative. We're seeing Griezmann be, I think, the outstanding player in Spain this year, possibly with Bellingham and Kroos maybe, or Rudiger perhaps as well. He's been really, really good. They have been good to watch. As you say, their home record is phenomenal until the defeat against Athletic last week. It's 28 games, 26 wins, 2 draws, going back over a year. But that away form is bizarre. And actually, the last couple of defeats are are outliers a little bit. In that I didn't think they were terrible in this game. I don't think they were brilliant, because actually Isak has the goal, one against the bar, one he provides, and one he puts just wide, if I remember rightly. Last night I was doing a list of the moments that he'd been involved in. There were kind of four really big, high, sort of standout moments. But they created chances, Atletico. They probably should have got an equaliser at some point. That one that's cleared off the line, I think it's Navas, isn't it? They really,
that's ridiculous.
I don't really understand how that doesn't end up in the back of the net. And I thought, similar in the Copa del Rey, when they were beaten by Athletic, their first defeat at home in a year, I actually thought they played really well. I thought they were really unlucky not to win that. And I wonder if there's a degree of fatigue after the last month, and certainly Simeone had a bit of a complaint about that post-game yesterday, which isn't great, actually, because if they're about to go into the Champions League now, although they do now have a week off before the next Champions League game, they could do with getting the players fit and fresh. And I don't know about you, but is there a temptation for Simeone to revert to type a little bit in the Champions League, particularly as it's two-legged ties?
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah, I think there's every chance we see that. Listen, guys, unfortunately, we simply don't have any time for any discussion of the Segunda this week. In unrelated news, Sporting beat Oviedo 1-0 in the Asturian derby. This week, in the Champions League, on Tuesday night, you've got Leipzig against Real Madrid. Have you heard how difficult it is for a lot of Spanish journalists to pronounce Leipzig?
Yes.
Yes.
It gets absolutely mauled. It shouldn't be that hard. It doesn't look like a particularly difficult word, now, admittedly.
Leipzig. Anyway.
Mind you, we've spent most of this season listening to them trying to say Leicester. So, you know,
yes,
it's not a huge surprise. And in fairness, it's only the last pod in which I was calling Trois Troyes. And, you know, there's been plenty of names that I've absolutely murdered over the years. So maybe I shouldn't laugh too much.
Maybe we should shut up. You're absolutely right. Wednesday night, you've got PSG against the La Real. Can they?
I can say PSG. End?
Yes. PSG. PSG against La Real. So there is plenty of big, big football for us to enjoy this week. And we'll be back later on Thursday or Friday to analyse what happens in the Champions League with those Spanish sides. So make sure you join us then, amigos, on patreon.com/TSFP. And if you don't, we'll be back here next Monday, as always. Adios.
Cheerio.